Tradition of Victory, written by Alexander Kent and read by Michael Jaston.
God and the sailor we alike adore, but only when in danger, not before. The danger o'er, both are alike requited. God is forgotten, and the sailor slighted. John Owen. Chapter 1. A Touch of Land. Even for the west country of England, the summer of 1801 was rare with its cloudless blue skies and generous sunlight. In Plymouth, on this bustling July forenoon, the glare was so bright that the ships which seemed to cover the water from the Hamoaze to the Sound itself danced and shimmered to lessen the grimness of their gun decks and the scars of those which had endured the fury of battle. A smart gig pulled purposefully beneath the stern of a tall three-decker and skilfully avoided a cumbersome lighter, loaded almost to the gills with great casks and barrels of water. The gig's pale oars rose and fell together, and her crew, in their checkered shirts and tarred hats, were a credit to her ship and coxswain. The latter was gauging the comings and goings of other harbour craft, but his mind was firmly on the gig's passenger, Captain Thomas Herrick, whom he had just carried from the jetty. Herrick was well aware of his coxswain's apprehension, just as he could sense the tension from the way his gig's crew carefully avoided his eye as they feathered their blades and made the boat scud across the water like a bright beetle. It had been a long, tiresome journey from Kent, Herrick's home, and as the distance from Plymouth had fallen away, he had started to fret over what he would discover. His ship, the 74-gun Benbow, had arrived in Plymouth barely a month back. It was incredible to believe that it was less than 3 months since the bloody fight itself, the one which was now called the Battle of Copenhagen. The small inshore squadron of which Benbow was the flagship had fought with distinction. Everyone had said so, and the Gazette had hinted that but for their efforts, things might have gone very differently. Herrick shifted on his thwart and frowned. He did not notice the stroke oarsman flinch under his stare, nor was he conscious of seeing him at all. Herrick was 44 years old, and had made the hard and treacherous climb to his present appointment with neither influence nor patronage. He had heard it all before, and despised those who spoke of a sea fight as if it were a kind of umpired contest. Those sort of folk never saw the carnage, the broken bodies and minds which went with each encounter, the tangle of cordage and splintered timbers and spars, which had to be put to rights without so much as a by your leave, so that the ruin could be restored into a fighting ship and sent where she could be best used. He glanced around the busy anchorage, ships taking on stores, others being refitted. His eye rested on a lithe frigate, mastless and riding high above her reflection, uncluttered by guns and men, as she swung to her warps from a slipway. Just launched. He saw the waving hats and arms, the bright flags curling along her empty gunports, her growing confidence like that of a newly dropped colt. Herrick frowned again. After 8 years of constant war with France and her allies, they were still short of frigates. Where would this one go? Who would command her, and find glory or ignominy? Herrick turned and looked at the young lieutenant, who had come out to collect him with the gig. He must have arrived during his 7 precious days in Kent. He was so pale and young, so unsure of himself, that Herrick could barely see him as a newly joined midshipman, let alone a lieutenant. But the war had taken so many that the whole fleet seemed to be manned by boys and old men. It was useless to ask him anything. He was scared of his own shadow. Herrick glanced up at his square-shouldered coxswain as he steered the boat beneath another tapering bowsprit and glaring figurehead. This shivering boy, posing as a lieutenant, had met him at the jetty, doffed his hat, and had stammered in one breath, "The First Lieutenant's respect, sir, and the Admiral is come aboard." Thank God the First Lieutenant had been there to greet him, Herrick thought grimly. But what was Rear Admiral Blytho, an officer he had served in many parts of the world, a man whom he loved more than any other, doing aboard Benbow now?